This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, Episode 1 for April 26th, 2008. Welcome to the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we've got a lot to talk about this episode. Joining me tonight is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer and the iPod Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us again. Next, we have Adam Christensen of the MacCast. Thanks for coming to the show, Adam.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And last but not least, we have Mac OS Ken himself, Mr. Ken Ray of the Mac OS Ken podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
All right. So we have so much to talk about. I didn't think we would, you know, at the beginning of the week and throughout the week. But, you know, yesterday, Thursday, and today, Friday, a lot came out. So we're just going to dive right in. And starting first with talking about second-gen iPhone stuff. Engadget today got some information from a good source, supposedly, that the next iPhone will have GPS support, as well as, of course, the 3G internet. So it's going to be slightly fatter, and it's going to look supposedly a lot like the picture that iPod Observer posted. That was actually something that that Jeff posted on iPod Observer and got picked
right up.
So the idea, what this thing is going to look like, it's going to be a new case. It's going to be completely black glossy on the back. So it's going to be a new case design. It'll be a little thicker, and it's got GPS 3G, and it doesn't have a recessed headphone jack, so that's good. And supposedly it's already being tested. So Jeff, since you're the one who posted that picture, I don't know how close you are to that source, but what do you think of this?
You know, based on everything that I've seen and the information that I managed to get a hold of, that photo that I ran, I'm kind of thinking there's a really good chance that picture was legit. So, you know, we couldn't tell how thick the iPhone in that photo was, but just overall, I think that may really turn out to be the new iPhone design.
So you don't think it's going to be one of those famous Steve Jobs fake leaked product pictures or anything like that?
No, and I've seen a few other pictures come through my email that I'm looking at and thinking, okay, either this is a plant or someone's just totally trying to jerk me around.
And, wait a minute, is that an 8 gig little etching on the back of that on the back of the iPhone in the picture?
I believe it was. I don't have the picture open in front of me right now, but I believe it was etched 8 gig.
Yeah, it was.
You think they're going to keep an 8 gig, really? I mean, with NAND flash prices going down as much as they are, with them launching a whole new thing and with them trying to get more people, especially once you have faster services, people buying and downloading things more to their iPhone, 8 gig seems small for the next version of the device.
Yeah, I could see that being too small. But on the other hand, I could also see Apple saying, look, we're having to deal with chip density and with the other things we're adding in, we just don't have room for all the extra stuff, in this case, extra stuff being more RAM. So yeah. I don't know.
Adam, have you seen the picture?
Yeah. And actually, I noticed that you put on a comment on there. You know, one of the things I saw when it first came out was a lot of people were wondering if it was one of the colorware, you know, basically dips or whatever they do with those devices. But obviously, if there's a little etching on there, that was either Photoshop back in, if it is a colorware one, right? But right, it looks like the shape's completely different. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what you guys thought, you know, why you kind of ruled out the fact that it might be just a colorware job?
Right. And then also, if you look near the bottom, where on the current iPhone, you have the plastic insert that covers where the antennas are. Right. It looks a little bit different there too.
Yeah, it doesn't right look like there's really a seam there where the plastic cap and the metal would meet if it was a colorware.
Exactly.
And someone else in the comments on that story mentioned that I'm not sure about this. I've never done a Colorware, but supposedly Colorware actually brands the back of the phone when they do one.
Well, listen, the overall shape looks, a lot different. It looks more rounded. And the other thing that really got me about this, wondering if it were to be legitimate, is I have a really hard time seeing, and maybe it's just because of the web picture, but on the bottom, I don't really see a defined area where the docking connector would be, which is a little strange.
Right, and that may be simply just because of the angle that it that you're seeing it at. It could be slightly different.
I'll be honest, this is the first time I've seen the picture. But I certainly mean no offense to you guys for publishing it, because it's out there.
I cannot,
and it's pretty convincing. But
I just can't believe you don't read my articles every day. What's wrong with you?
Oops, sorry. Yeah, forget it. Anyway, I'm looking at the picture for the first time. There, I'm being completely honest. I'm looking at the picture for the first time, and I'm having a hard time buying it. Now, Adam will tell you that I think it was on his show. I said that the Fatboy Nano picture had to be fake.
Right.
So I have been wrong about this before, but I'm just – the fact that I don't see the dock connector, like Adam pointed out, and I just – I gotta think that the 8 gig is going to go the way of the 4 gig.
You know, on that, I wonder. I don't know if they would go into that level of detail, but maybe. I mean, one speculation could be it's a a demo unit and a development unit, and they've kind of that's what they used. That's what they had around, so they kind of adapted. And I don't know why they would go through the trouble to do that kind of detail on the case, though.
That's true.
Kind of throws that idea out for me. So, but I would agree with you, Ken. I mean, 8 gigs. I don't think they could get away with. I think they need to do a bump up.
I mean, unless it's just for price differentiation. That's the only reason I can think of that you would do it.
That's possible.
But then if you're going to do that, why not just keep the regular iPhone? And that's, obviously the price of that, if they stay with an Edge iPhone for people who don't, feel like they need to spend that much more money, or for people who don't feel like they need that much speed, maybe that's your price differentiator. The only other reason I could see for doing an 8 gig, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you. That would be a great way to do a price differentiation between your 3G and Edge phones.
Right, right. Yeah.
One thing that I did notice, you're talking about the etching on the back of the phone. I remember from back in 2007 when we saw those rotating iPhones under glass. Those iPhones didn't have all the same text that we have on the back of our iPhones. It said something like, this device hasn't been approved by the FCC, etc. And looking at the text on the back of this new supposed iPhone, it doesn't line up, doesn't look like what we have on current iPhones. So that could be another thing, either indicating that, it's totally fake, or that it is completely legitimate. And on the same line, you guys heard about the O2 dropping the price on the iPhone recently, right?
Yeah.
They just came out with a report today saying that they have completely sold out of 8 gigabyte iPhones and on their website, and there are very few in the retail stores.
Right, and Carphone Warehouse has sold out completely of everything they had.
Right. Yeah.
Now, just to confuse everyone, if you go to the UK Apple Store online, iPhone ships in 24 hours. If you go to the United States Apple Store online, iPhone ships 5 to 7 days. What's up with that?
That is interesting. I heard about the iPhone being shipped in, a 24-hour time for, the UK store, but I didn't actually check out the US store and, what the shipping time estimates are for that. So that is a little weird.
Quick question on that. Does the UK price, that's only from O2 and Carphone Warehouse, right? That doesn't translate onto Apple's online site?
Right, yeah.
So the only thing I could think of is maybe Apple's trying to capitalize on the fact that there's depleted... it's probably maybe because there's depleted supply and they've just reoriented and said, okay, we're gonna ship priority to the UK and kind of slow down U.S. sales, because, you know, we've got Apple stores all over, and if people want to get an 8-gig phone, they can go into an Apple store or an AT&T store. And so for online, we're just going to prioritize U.K. shipments and maybe delay the U.S. ones, because I would assume they're all coming out of China.
Right, yeah. That is an interesting idea, and it's very possible. But the impression that I got from this is that it could also be that they've said that they don't expect to get any more in at Carphone Warehouse, I believe. And that's the idea behind that is, you know, there's something new coming, because we've all seen that when there's a new product, you know, like new iMacs and whatever, there's usually a shortage of whatever it is shortly before the new version comes out. So that's
right. And supposedly O2 had an internal memo saying that the 8-gig iPhone has been tagged as end of life.
Right. Yes. So
for the record, nobody's buying what, Apple Chief Operating Officer Tim Cook said on the conference call this week, that they just didn't expect the slowdown. I mean, everybody here, it sounds like, is expecting that they're intentionally running themselves out of stock so that they can have shelf space for the next big thing.
I don't think that.
Oh, really?
I'm probably okay. In the minority. I'm the only one who's not believing the 3G iPhone coming out in June. And I've said it really? On my show, and I'll keep saying it. Yeah. Everybody keeps saying it's going to come out in June. I think it will likely be announced in June. Might be announced at WWDC, or might be announced later in the month when the third-party apps start shipping. But I don't think we're going to actually see it in on store shelves until the fall.
You know, that's exactly what I've been saying, too.
It is. But, Jeff, don't you think that correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you say that you don't think that they're even going to announce it at WWDC or as soon as June?
I don't think they'll announce it at WWDC. Now, there's a possibility that they could announce it when they do that App Store rollout, iPhone 2.0 software, all of that. That wouldn't surprise me. But I'm certainly not expecting to see an iPhone in June. I think it'll be fall, like I've been predicting for months now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stick by that. And then if Steve pulls the new iPhone out of his pocket at WWDC, okay, well, then I'll just be in the same position I was in when I saw the real photos of the 3G Nano, and I called them fakety fake, 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 fake.
Right, yeah. Realizing how beautiful they are once they're in the blessed hands of Steve Jobs.
Right.
So
I like the possibility, but I'm not going to say that it's going to happen, but I like the possibility of seeing it by the end of summer, before the fall. I don't mean seeing it announced. I mean actually seeing it on shelves. And what I would really like to see, and I don't know how likely it is, but first of all, I've been wondering if there's any way that they could have, and I don't know enough about the law. I don't know about the legalities of it, but I've been wondering if there's any way that they've either already gone ahead and gotten the 3G iPhone through the FCC in the closed stuff that we never got to see with the FCC filings, because they put a request in that some of the stuff stay sealed. So, I mean, it's possible that they beat this a year ago by saying, here's what we want to do. They still haven't done it because, you know, maybe there was still the power problem, so they've been working on things like that. And I'm not saying that that's what happened, because I have no idea. Either way, though, if you're going to be introducing all of these apps, that's going to spur some buying. I would think that you would want to announce at some point that there's going to be a 3G iPhone. I would like to see the 3G iPhone and the App Store roll at the same time. And it strikes me as a possibility. I'm not going to say a definite, but I would say a definite maybe, because I think at that point, the reason business is held back is because they haven't had the App Store. And the other reason business is held back is because they haven't had 3G. So you're going to give them half a reason to buy it, but you're not going to give them the whole reason to buy it?
Well, that would be so Apple.
it definitely would.
Yeah, but they're playing in a different field now. I mean, they haven't had a chance really at the enterprise since when? The 80s?
I'd say early 90s.
Okay. So they haven't had a real chance at the enterprise since the early 90s. They're going after it. They're not going after it with computers right now. I think they'll let people come to them on computers, but they are going after it with the next generation of the iPhone. And we all love it, but we're not the target.
Right.
I mean, consumers are the target, but for a lot of this stuff, the target is, well, anybody who's been buying BlackBerries for the past few years for their offices. So it seems to me that this, they kind of have to hit full bore. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen. I am saying it wouldn't surprise me, and I'd really, really love it because I want a 3G iPhone sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, according to Citi, I believe it was, some analysts at Citi, they're predicting that there is going to be a 3G iPhone at WWDC, but, you know, just they're analysts, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they know anything about, you know, what's actually going on behind closed doors at Apple.
Right.
But, you know, we're all predicting it. We all think it's coming. And, you know, with AT&T's comments earlier that, you know, 3G for all the phones that are smartphones are coming in the next couple of months, that, you know, adds a little bit of weight to that.
But, right.
You know, I mean, who honestly knows? There is kind of related to that. Supposedly there are, according to Republica.it, I believe it is, there's supposedly going to be an unlocked version of a 3G iPhone in Italy by the end of the summer. Did any of you see that?
You know, the rumor that I saw on that said that they, whichever carrier in Italy it is, was going to have the iPhone exclusively and unlocked through the summer, and that at the end of the summer, the other carriers in Italy could start selling the iPhone as well.
Right.
Which would lend credence to a June launch because, you know, you have to have all of summer to be able to sell it in the summer.
Right.
But of course, it's just a rumor.
Yeah.
I got an email from a listener in Italy who had forwarded that story to me kind of when it broke and said, you know, these guys are, I guess, you know, I don't know much about Italy, but a well-respected and pretty well-known paper in Italy. And he seemed to believe it wholeheartedly. The one thing I was wondering about is how do you keep an unlocked device exclusive?
I think that
they're the only ones that can sell it.
Yeah.
That's how I interpreted it.
Okay. So not exclusive to the network, but just selling the actual device and taking whatever bet they get.
So I guess you could go to an Apple store or rather order it online and just, you know, drop any SIM card in there you want to immediately. But you have the advantage of going to Telecom Italia Mobile to get your iPhone right away. But
kind of surprising that nobody asked about that on the conference call.
Yeah,
it just occurred to me. It didn't even occur to me during. I mean, up until you guys were just talking about it, nobody said anything about that on the call. Which is, I mean, and probably Apple would have said no comment,
right?
Anyway, but you know, they might have surprised people, or I don't know. It's interesting.
To me, the bigger thing in here is that I think there's no doubt that Apple is already and has already been reconsidering the exclusive carrier deals. I think they've seen that's kind of played out and they took advantage of it. And I think that was their goal all along, was, hey, we'll go into as many markets as we can and get exclusive locked deals. And sort of when if we start really butting heads on that, then we'll start looking at markets to just go ahead and sell the phone and open it up. And I think especially with the App Store right around the corner, they're even a little bit more amicable to doing that because they have, you know, another revenue stream. So there's so many revenue streams around the iPhone. I think that they're seeing, while the exclusivity deals and the rev sharing is really profitable, you know, sort of in the short run, however long that contract is, long term, they're going to be much better off by just selling as many darn phones as they possibly can.
Yeah.
What about things like visual voicemail, though? I mean, don't they actually have to work with AT&T on that, or is that something that would work?
I was just going to ask that same question.
Well, I mean, but is that a really feature? Is that enough of a killer feature that, you know, someone's going to say, oh, I'd, you know, and they could still do those deals. They could still find the carrier that's going to carry that feature, and that could be a preferred carrier, right? So, hey, preferred carrier in this market is ABC Company. And they have the visual voicemail and some of these extra features that are built into the network. But hey, if you want to go on the other network, sure. Here's the iPhone. Go, you know, have a go at it.
Well, and don't forget that.
Oh, my go turn. Ahead.
Okay. Don't forget that T-Mobile has already taken care of the visual voicemail thing in Europe. So, you know, that's something that they don't have to reinvent if they want to bring that back over here in the United States for unlocked phones.
That's true.
So, you know, we have a situation where carriers have already been working on visual voicemail. So once we get to the point where everyone's going to have it, okay, then it's real easy just to take your phone and have all the features everywhere you go.
I want to really quickly, I want to address something that you said a minute ago, Adam. Do I think that that's a deal breaker for consumers? Not generally. Do I think it's a deal breaker for Jobs? Yes.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
He wants things to work the way he wants them to work, and he wanted visual voicemail on the iPhone.
I think that's a really good point, definitely. If I don't think they're going to have a feature on the iPhone that's available that doesn't actually work in certain circumstances. It may make more sense to have Apple say, all right, any carrier that wants to have the iPhone, you can, you know, you have to add this thing to your network in order to get those customers on your network with the iPhone. I don't think he's going to let it go ahead, let people just have the iPhone and not have some of the features work. I don't think Steve would allow that.
That's a good point.
So, have you guys seen that HTC Touch ad? You've all heard about the HTC Touch, right?
Right.
It's the Windows mobile device that has all the features. Well, not all the features, but the touch capability of the iPhone. It's just running Windows, so you know, I think we're all Mac biased here. But the ad, it's a really nice ad, and it's really pleasant. There's no talking or anything like that. Most of the ad is just this hand walking through different areas and touching things. And the whole idea is that, well, look, here is a phone that isn't the iPhone that, you know, you can still touch and just do everything through touch. What do you guys think of this?
That's a really great way to design an ad. When you don't have a product that you can really show off compelling features for, you just make people feel good about it.
Exactly.
I mean, the phone's only in like the last 2 or 3 seconds of the commercial.
Right. And it's totally ripping off the whole, you know, when you answer a call, you pull your hand with the phone right out of frame like you're about to answer the call. They totally ripped that off. But I don't think that Windows Mobile, even with HTC's modifications on top of it, I don't think that it can be as fluid of an experience as OS X on the iPhone is, because OS X just has so much great graphical stuff built in. It's just, I mean, it's the Mac VPC thing all over again, where you have all these great, you have this great interface to get all the same stuff done on the Mac, and you know, it's really hard for the PC to do that because there are some things on the Mac that the PC just doesn't have. And I think that even extends further on the mobile platform, because it's a really cut down version of Windows.
Well, also keep in mind that Windows, just by its nature, is an exercise in compromise, because you have Microsoft making an operating system, then you have everyone else making the hardware that operating system runs on.
Right.
So it's a give and take for all these products to make sure that you have compatibility. So you don't have that same level of control that Apple does, where they have the operating system, the applications, and the hardware all bundled together.
Exactly.
Well, the other thing is it's still running Windows Mobile underneath, right? So HTC then developed and added some sort of, it must be like an application layer. I mean, on the iPhone we have Cocoa Touch, and you have a whole layer that's built into the framework of the operating system that's designed just to handle the touch interaction in the GUI. So you've not only got the hardware by all kinds of different vendors, and then you got the software layer on top of that, and now you've got another kind of software layer at a higher level that's kind of handling the interaction developed by somebody else. I'm guessing HTC didn't even develop that, so who knows that what that was farmed out to. And it's just, you're going to be really hard-pressed, even with really talented engineers in every different area, to recreate that seamless experience. I would totally agree with those statements.
I hate to sound like an elitist, but I've pretty much stopped talking about HTC on macOS CAN, simply for the reason that they're going to be a good player for people who don't want to spend the money on the iPhone. They might be an excellent way for a T-Mobile or a Sprint to draw people in, they'll be big in emerging markets where people can't afford the iPhone. Although I'm getting email from people in China who say that the middle class in China has more money than it's ever had before, and that only looks to keep growing. And so a lot of people are actually looking at the price of the iPhone in China as relatively cheap. So, I mean, it's never – and you know, maybe I'll eat my words someday, but it's I doubt it. It's never gonna be a player. I mean, it will always be, I wanted an iPhone, but, you know, kind of thing. Or, you know, I hate Apple, so I won't get an iPhone. It seems to me.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't actually used an HTC device. From what I hear, though, they are pretty elegant and very well made. But like you've all said, it's made by so many different companies, and it's not so seamlessly integrated, and it's not the OS isn't made for that device. They had to make compromises with it. But I think it will be good for, you know, the people who, you know, like the Zune people. Some people are iPod
exactly.
people.
I was going to say that.
Oh, yes. Ouch.
Some people are iPod people, and some people don't want to be iPod people, so they're Zune people. So
and then you've got the Far East and emerging markets who, you know, are just want to spend less. I mean, they want something right. cool and they want to spend less. So, I mean, they're not necessarily Zune people or iPod people. They're, hey, look at this cheap MP3 player I got when I was at the mall.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we've heard about in the past that Apple has a lot of cash on hand, and it's sort of weird. But it looks like they've recently just used some of it to purchase PA Semiconductor. And what they do, they're a semiconductor company, and I think if I remember correctly, they're fabless, so they don't have a giant fabrication facility. But they're known for their low power chips, and the only strange thing about this is, you know, right now Apple is using Intel for their computers, and then the ARM processors for the iPhone. What PA Semi does is they actually do the power architecture, which is actually Apple's older chips, the Power PCs. So, Jeff, I think you know a little bit more about this whole thing. Do you want to talk a little bit more about it?
Sure. All right. So you hit on an important point right off, which is PA Semi is a chip designer, not a chip maker. So, you know, there's other companies that are building their designs. And I do find it interesting, though, that this little company designs the PowerPC style chips, as opposed to what, you know, the chips Intel is making or all these other companies. So, you know, that's really kind of interesting. What I think is really going on here is not so much that Apple is buying a company so that it can make chips for the iPhone that don't come from Intel. I think what it's doing is buying a company so that it can start creating chip designs itself.
Yeah.
And then work with Intel and other companies to have these fabbed.
Yeah. You know what, Jeff? It's funny that you say that, because I I was reading all these stories, and I'm reading the stuff about the 3G iPhone and the timelines, and I was thinking today back to trying to figure out what's going on and what's Apple up to with all this, and sort of this harebrained idea hit me that, you know, Apple's pushing real hard trying to get this 3G iPhone out the door. And what I've always heard about the 3G iPhone, and especially now that you're hearing also these rumors of sort of GPS possibly in the iPhone, that power and battery life is always at the forefront and mm-hmm. kind of a big issue. And then I started thinking about the MacBook Air and the chip that they had sort of Intel almost, you know, redesign or recreate. And so my harebrained idea was that maybe there's a problem with getting the 3G iPhone. They want to get it out in June, but they're still struggling. So they got all the, you know, the baseband and 3G stuff figured out, but they're still struggling with this power issue. And I was almost wondering, because I guess the guy who founded this company also has a history with ARM, if I'm not mistaken. And so I was wondering if maybe Apple's saying, well, you know what, let's get some designers here. Why would they spend all that money? And everybody's wondering, why would you spend that amount of money and where's the return on investment? I think Steve Jobs came out and said, well, it was for the intellectual property for the designers. So right. I was kind of thinking along the same lines, but from a little bit of a different angle, thinking, you know, maybe they want to get these engineers, these designers in here to solve sort of some power issues and bring that power footprint down and work with actually the chip makers who are making the chips over at ARM and say, hey, look, here's some ideas. We want you to make some changes to some of your chip designs. And they just wanted knowledgeable people that could talk to the people over at ARM and maybe get more power savings on that chip to kind of make up for maybe some of the losses that they're incurring with the 3G stuff. And that kind of went back to my theory of thinking maybe they will announce it. And the only sticking point I have is, how does the FCC filing work? Do they only look at, you know, what kind of baseband and what kind of cellular wireless stuff you're doing in there? Or do they have to also factor in, you know, whatever chip, you know, the brains of the iPhone? Or can Apple at some point get the FCC approval and really swap out or change that chip before it launches without having to, like, refile or do any finagling in that area?
That is interesting. Jeff, do you know anything about, you know, how that works? Does the FCC have to know about CPUs and all of that for these type of devices, or are they a little more lenient on that because it's not actually transmitting a signal?
You know, I'm not an FCC expert, nor do I play one on television. However, from what I've seen, and I might be totally wrong here, but from what I've seen, it looks like the FCC cares about the radio transmitters and the technology that surrounds that. So the actual processor driving the device, I don't think they care about unless it's suddenly like outputting radio frequencies that they need to manage.
Right. And according to EE Time, supposedly the purchase of PA Semi wasn't so much for purchasing, you know, getting the products and everything like that. It was said that it was just more so for the people there and all of their designs and engineering staff and all of that. Unfortunately, it seems like PA Semi's customers may be, you know, left out in the cold. But, you know, that's Apple's goal was to get the information there and the engineers and the talent from PA Semi, supposedly.
Well, isn't that Jobs said that at to the not the personal tech blog, but to some blog at the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
Yeah, to some blog at the Wall Street Journal, he said, I mean, the angle that they were going on was, oh my God, are you about to drop Intel? Which is kind of a ridiculous angle to take right away.
Right.
And Jobs basically indicated, without saying, you know, directly, that they were looking towards the future of the iPhone and presumably other mobile devices. I think the iPhone and the iPod were the implications. But, mm-hmm. you know, this and again, just because I want it, I mean, this also revives hopes for not the Newton, but for, you know, the Mac tablet that I keep waiting for.
Yeah.
I may be the only one waiting for it at this point.
That was my other theory is that, you know, they're bringing these guys on board to work with some company to help design chips for that sort of larger, you know, I almost call it the pad style computer that you know, Star Trek-ish 7 or 9 inch screen type touchscreen device. Because when I first saw the reports too, I think I saw some of the information about some of the, you know, supposed low powered chips that these guys had designed, and they really weren't on par with a lot of the mobile chips in terms of their, you know, power footprint. They were a little higher, so they were more, I think, targeted at, you know, computers or some sort of larger device than a really truly mobile device.
That's what I had heard that too, although I haven't heard it a lot of places, but I have heard that one or two places as well, that it was actually that the kind of things that BA Semi design are actually a little too power consumptive for at least any current version of the iPhone. I mean, anything like what they do right now, that it takes up a little bit too much to be applicable.
Yeah, which would jive in line with what Jobs said about, you know, it was really about the intellectual property, and it's maybe these guys just didn't have those types of projects yet to work on. I'm sure they have the talent and the knowledge to build, you know, mobile chips as well.
That was the concern.
And they're too busy running tanks.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know, that was my concern.
F-15s and all that stuff.
Because, you know, I think most of us have, I think we all had a PowerPC Mac at some point, that, you know, they were known for, you know, that the reason Apple switched to Intel was because of how much power PowerPC architecture chips draw. And, you know, I think about how my brother has an Xbox 360, and I think it has like two or three PowerPCs in there, and it just draws so much heat that eventually almost all of these Xbox 360s just kind of destroy themselves with heat, you know, and consume so much power. So, but then again, like you said, Adam, it may just be because they haven't had that sort of project to work on at PA Semi. And
yeah, if they're working in military contracts, the military is huge on, you know, you can look through the thing. But, I mean, they've been using PowerPCs forever. I mean, I think PowerPCs were in this, you know, power the space shuttle, too. So,
yeah. So right after the conference call, and we'll get to that in a second, but there was the next version of the SDK for the iPhone was released. I believe it's beta 4. And it adds a couple new new features to... I think it's the emulator, I believe. It adds the OpenGL ES stuff. So I believe that is the graphics layer. So you can test out your graphics intensive applications, you know, such as, I guess, games and, you know, anything else that would need the graphics horsepower from the iPhone in the emulator. And also code signing is being enforced on there now. So before you could load on... you know, just any old application on there, but now it's being enforced in the emulator, which, you know, isn't a big deal if you're not a developer. But there was some developers have found in the SDK that some mentions of things that make them believe that there may be GPS coming to the next iPhone, like we were talking about before with what Engadget said. So, I mean, what do you guys think about GPS in the iPhone? Is that something that people want, or?
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here and go the opposite direction of what most people are thinking. No GPS in the iPhone. I don't see it happening. And I think that the whole GPS thing is just another instance where consumers think they want that in the product, but Uncle Steve knows what they really want, and it's not a GPS. So my guess is that the GPS hints in the SDK relate to hooks that Apple's putting in there so that third-party companies can create GPS add-ons if they want to.
I would tend to agree with that. I think that talk to anybody who has a GPS in their phone and ask them about, you know, how long their phone's battery lasts, and, you know, get a good idea of how few people probably want GPS. I think you're right. I think a lot of people think they want it because it sounds cool and, oh, you know, I can use my camera phone and it'll tag my photos and I can get driving directions and this, that, and the other. But I think, you know, more of an add-on style device for the small percentage of people that want it, and that makes the most sense, is that there's some hooks in the SDK.
The only reason I can think of that anybody might want it, and yeah, consumers might want it, although so many of us don't actually go any place where we would need or want a GPS. Businesses might want it though, yeah. just for the possibility of selling services or, you know, selling advertisements to somebody, and it's a lot easier to do if you know exactly where they are. Adam and I were together at Macworld. And he tried out the new thing that the Google Map had, where it sort of tries to triangulate your position, you know, based on surrounding Wi-Fi and where you are in the cell network and or cell towers, rather, in relation to cell towers. And it was good enough to tell him that he was in San Francisco. You're going to have a hard time selling ads.
Yeah.
If that's your play, if the closest you can get is you're in a 7x7 mile radius of something, or a 49-square-mile city. On the other hand, if they are actually able to add that, but from everything that I've heard from people, you're right. I mean, you would turn it on and then you would need to recharge your iPod. I mean, iPhone, excuse me.
I'm not sure about this because I've never had a phone with GPS in it, but from what I hear, GPS also takes a lot of time to figure out where you are. Have any of you had experience with that?
I haven't, but I've heard exactly the same thing.
Okay, I've had a lot of experience with GPS, just not in a cell phone. So here's GPS 101 for you. All right, so you have to have the transmitter and receiver so that the you know, and the satellite, so that your device can actually get the information, and then it uses that data, you know, based on how long it takes to go from the satellite down and all that, to figure out where it is. So you really need, you know, you can get your position based on one satellite, and so your phone or GPS can triangulate from a single satellite because the Earth is moving. So it has to wait for the Earth to move just enough so that it can be at a different angle in relation to the satellite. If you have multiple channels in your GPS unit, then it can gather data from multiple satellites at the same time. So if you have at least three channels, then you can do a full triangulation much faster and get commercial GPSs, you know, the things from like Garmin and Magellan that, that you hold in your hand. Those typically have at least 12 channels so that you can deal with all of the stuff that goes along with satellites being hidden and line of sight and all that.
So the problem with doing that sort of thing in the iPhone would, I assume, be power? Power consumption?
Oh, most definitely.
Okay, yeah. So that would make sense why they would only have one and it would be pretty slow. So would you think that it would be slower than the current, you know, locate me thing that it has, or faster?
That's
or
slow too.
Yeah, that is pretty slow.
You know, I would put it in the same ballpark. And honestly, I would put the accuracy just a little bit better than what you're getting off of the triangulation thing we have with Find Me right now. Because doing a single channel location off of GPS is not that accurate.
I hate to do this, but I got to pull a Bob Hope here. I got to run.
Okay, Ken.
I do apologize, but I am curious to hear the rest of the to hear the rest of it and see what you guys decide without me. And one last thing, really quickly, congratulations on starting the show.
Thank you. And do you want to plug your podcast?
Well, there's always time for a plug, Mike.
You got to do
that. I got another 20 minutes for that. Mac OS Ken, that's my daily website, Monday through Friday. And that's all I'll say, because then once you get there, I'll try to get you to pay me for a sixth day of the show. But daily news on just about everything that I can find Apple, as long as it's not dumb, unless it's really dumb, because I can turn that into funny. Right. And you can find it at macosken.com.
And on iTunes.
And on iTunes, yep. Yes. You can go just look for... Yeah. Ken Ray.
Well, thanks for coming on, Ken.
Sorry, I have to duck out. Thank you very much,
guys. Not a problem. See ya.
See ya, Ken.
See ya later.
Okay. So,
One of the funniest guys in Mac podcasting.
He is really great. And his show.
In a really subtle and great way.
Absolutely.
His show. Sorry. I'm gonna add on to his plug.
Yeah. And as his show is much shorter than this one, I think it's usually about 15 minutes, bytes of info. It's real quick. So, you don't have
so it's great for ADD people.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's perfect for a morning cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. It's great.
So also in the iPhone SDK, talking about that, in the latest beta that was seeded, the unofficial Apple web blog posted that they heard from somebody, and I'm not sure who it's from. I have an idea, but I'm not going to say because they didn't say, and I believe they're behind an NDA. But they have found what they believe is the ability to run processes and applications and all of that in the background for third-party applications. And so what we first heard when the SDK was released is that once you tap the application, you're in the application, you're doing what you're doing, but once you hit that home button in your on the iPhone, that application quits, so it doesn't it can't receive any more information, such as for, you know, like an AIM client, you can't keep receiving messages through that, even though you're not focused on it, or if you take a call or any of that. That the idea was that that would stop running until you come back to it. So that would be a pretty big deal for people who want to do chat applications or Twitter applications, for example. It wouldn't work too well and the idea, I guess, is that you don't want to run down your battery. But it looks like they're what they found in the latest seed of the SDK is the ability to badge the icons on the springboard, and that's the home screen that you see. And you know, a badge is something like, you know, having a little red circle that has the number one or something like that, indicating that you have a new message, something like that. Have you guys heard about this?
I haven't heard about the background process thing until you just mentioned it now, you know, being discovered. But I have to say, this has not bothered me, and I just don't understand why this bothers so many people, because owning an iPhone, I mean, you have a limited amount of screen real estate. Mm-hmm. You can really only interact with one thing at a time anyway. And the only argument I've ever heard for needing this, up until you mentioned the badging thing, which might be, you know, nice in a chat client, but I have Skype. We're on Skype right now. Every time I pop open Skype, you know, it downloads a bunch of messages that people had sent me when I was offline, either on IM. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you can't be looking at your IM client, what's the difference whether those are coming in the background as you're not looking at them? You know, I guess they could pop up like SMSs do, but
yeah.
If anybody who has their Wi-Fi on and doesn't want to connect to a Wi-Fi network and be walking around with your iPhone, you know how annoying that can get.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, it's like, I don't want to interact with that thing. So I find it almost better that, hey, if I move away from my chat client, just sort of suspend that thing. And when I come back to it, just load in the four or five messages that came in from my buddies when I wasn't there, and then I can read them and respond to them. You know, and it can be handled on the server side or however you need to do it if you're building a chat application for the iPhone. So I just can't think of that many instances when I'm going to really need to have something running in the background. And, you know, and then it would also be, say I'm in another app that's using the network connection, I'd rather just have it devoted to the task that I'm doing rather than pulling down a bunch of stuff in the background.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
I think that OS X has stuff. I think it has that figured out how to keep give priority to applications that are in the front as opposed to applications that are running in the background. I'm pretty sure that's built into OS X right now. But I have a question for you, Adam. Do you use Twitter?
Yeah, I use Twitter. Yeah, and I love Twitter. But again, if I'm in a Twitter application, it's going to be consuming. I'm assuming on my iPhone, it's going to be consuming my whole screen, and I'm going to be Twittering.
Right.
If I go away from it, I can't read those Twitters. I'm interacting with something else. I'm busy, you know, typing something else. There's only one keyboard. It's not like when I Twitter on my Mac, I've got a couple screens or I've got a couple windows open and I can have it mm-hmm. inside and I can kind of be watching it. I wouldn't want that experience on my iPhone. And you can't really, you know, fit windows. So the only other way to happen would be to have these pop-ups constantly coming up. And then I just never get anything done. So
well, I think that
I'd rather have it be, you know, I come back to that and I can scroll through all the Twitters that came in while I was, you know, away doing something else.
Well, to me, that sounds like a user preference problem than, you know, just like either don't have it or have it. I would assume with something like that, you know, you can say, hey, do I want pop-up messages, yes or no?
Sure.
And then maybe it'll just let off a little a chirp noise or something like that, letting you know that you have a new tweet that you can go back to later on, or even putting something up in the the bar at the very top of the iPhone saying, you know, you have one more of these or something like that.
Sure.
But, you know, for at least for me, and I know a lot of people who would love a Twitter application and a chat application that run in the background, because I you get phone calls every once in a while when you're doing something, and for a second it's just a little bit annoying, but you know, you can go right back to it. But the you know, if you're sitting there posting a tweet or something, or you're chatting with a friend and a phone call comes in, and this may not be that big of a deal, when you're out and about and you're only using the edge network and you can't actually get data while you're on the phone, but it would be really irritating to just have that thing go away as soon as you get a call, because it'll even do that. You can't go back while you're on a call. Or at least I'm not sure. I guess you could go back while you're on a call and open that app.
Yeah, you absolutely can. And actually, it's funny you mentioned that feature, because I was going to ask you guys. That was a feature that I always forget I have, and I think it's because mm-hmm. of my training with my old cell phone.
Right, yeah.
You know, like when I'm on a call, I can't do anything. I can't take this thing away from my head. And it didn't change for me until I got a headset. I finally got, you know, a Bluetooth headset.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I can actually do other things while I'm on a phone call, and it handles it so elegantly with the little, you know, touch to return to call at the top. It changed my world when I got a headset. So,
you know, Adam, everything that you were saying about the way you interact with your iPhone, it's all been kind of soaking into me. I've just been sitting here thinking about it. You just converted me. I have decided that I'm not worried about background applications anymore, for the very reasons you have said. the whole interruption with my other interaction, I can see where that would get very annoying really quick. So I'm now in your camp on that one.
So I'm all alone now.
Yeah, you're all alone now. Yeah.
It's just, you know, if someone can show me, and maybe I'm just not seeing, you know, maybe I don't have the vision for the UI, but I mean, I can imagine even on the phone when I get an SMS and I'm on a phone call and it kind of blinks in my ear and it's like, oh, you know, just, you know, stay there. And you know, when I get off this phone call, then pull down. So maybe really what needs to happen is maybe if Apple just had some triggers or something where if you have an app running, this might be the way to handle it. You have an app running like a chat client. If when a phone call or you move away from that, if they could maybe just suspend it rather than totally quit it. And I don't know really what happens, but right. You know, sort of just say, okay, I'm moving away from you. You just sit there. But when I'm done, I'll just send you a little message and then go out and do what you need to do. You know, and pull down and update a counter or something like that. I don't know. Maybe there's just a more elegant way that's not totally, you know, having something completely run in the background. Maybe there's a middle tier. But I mean, overall, I don't see the huge benefit versus what you might lose, because I've also heard on other devices that do allow background processes, Windows mobile devices and stuff like that. Often that's where the errors occur. You have just something that's written poorly that suddenly goes off on a memory, you know, splurge and starts eating up all the memory and crashes the whole device. So, you know, why not just let that quit and you can come back to it and restart it. So I just haven't been sold on where the huge advantage is. I see some niceties like, oh yeah, that would be kind of cool, but I just don't see that killer app that really requires a background process. And I'm a developer and a programmer. I come across this all the time. People always say, oh, we want real-time this and real-time that. And when you really start digging deep and say, do you really need real-time or do you need almost real-time? And so to me, this is the same kind of thing. Do you really actually need background processes, or do you just need something that looks like a background process so that when I come back to my Twitters, all the tweets come in kind of at once and, hey, there they are.
So in the case of like a chat application, what would you want to see? Would you want to see that application say, well, you go back to your home screen, it'll switch to your message to your available message to away, or it won't even do something. It'll still make it seem like you're online, but those messages won't come in until you go back to it and possibly even badge that icon, but it won't actually bring notifications. Is that something that you would want?
Yeah. I think the creative company, you know, and the company that's going to win with a chat application on the iPhone is the company that thinks about stuff like that.
Yeah.
That says, okay, we know what the sandbox is, and we're going to figure out how to, you know, play the game the best. So, hey, when they go to do something else, I don't know what kind of messaging is going on. It'd be great if the iPhone had messaging like, oh, a call came in, and it just sends a message to that app that it can pick up and receive and say, oh, they got a call. And if they could intuitively switch your status message on a call, or, you know, if you could even set up different messages depending on, you know, surfing the web, looking up a URL, whatever, you know, that could be really cool. You know, and again, if it could send a message back, oh, I'm done, and say, oh, now you can go do your thing, tell me how many messages came in while I was doing this other thing and update the badge. You know, I don't know. I don't have the SDK. I downloaded it and played with it a little bit, but I haven't been really actively using it. So I just think there are probably some other creative ways where you could make the experience almost seem like there's background processes running without actually having background processes running. And I think the developers that figure out how to do that are going to make some really killer apps.
Okay, now I have a question. Do either of you guys have your iPhone set to auto check for email? I do not have my iPhone set that way because, well, I don't want it checking when I don't want it checking. Mm-hmm. So my two-part question now is, if you're using your iPhone and having it auto check for email, how is it letting you know you have new messages?
Just a little chime in the background.
Yeah. Okay.
So and it gets really annoying, to be honest. I do have it turned on, and I don't. Frankly, you know, if I really thought about it, I think it was just on because it was on by default,
right?
Right.
And I never turned it off. And if I really thought about, do I really use this feature? Other than like Michael was mentioning, you know, the badge gets updated, I think, with, you know, the number of emails you have, but it tops out at 50. So for me, it always just says 50. I don't know that it's particularly useful.
All right. So I was just curious because I was wondering if that would be a way to hook into these other applications with their near real-time performance. You know, you have like 5 new tweets that have come in. All right. So your Twitter application gets a badge that says 5 on it.
Right.
And then you don't see anything else.
And then maybe lets off a sound or something to let you know that something has happened if you want it.
Well, I mean, you could even set up a Twitter client that would, you know, Twitter an SMS. I mean, Twitter has the SMS capabilities, right? So, I mean, you could set up a bot. There, I mean, there's a million things that you could do to work around this. But I think the point for a lot of people is, why should we have to work around it? Why not just have that capability if we want it there? And so I guess if I really thought about it from a developer perspective, you know, I totally understand why they want it. But I also understand the flip side of why Apple wants to kind of keep that locked down. And I think it's mainly for stability. It's that thing that I mentioned before where, you know, who knows what a third party app might be doing. And mm-hmm. Yeah, Apple's going to screen them and they're going to run them through the store possibly. But, you know, the free ones, I don't think they're going to be looking at very much. And you can get memory leaks, you can get errors. And, you know, if you just make sure that when you have a phone call, which is an Apple, I just think Apple just wants to make sure as little as possible third-party apps are interfering with their applications on the phone. And it's all about making sure that the phone features that Apple's built in work and work consistently and aren't bothered by other processes running in the background.
Absolutely. Well, yesterday there was the Q2 conference call from Apple. It was awfully boring, but there was a little bit of good information in there. According to Apple, the iPhone is doing really well with the goal of selling, I believe it's 10 million iPhones in 2008. I don't recall right off the top of my head how many iPhones they sold. I think it was 1.7 million. Yeah, 1.7 million.
That sounds about right.
iPhones were sold in Q2. Here's my question on that. How do they figure that they're still going to be able to sell 10 million iPhones in 2008 if that's all they sold in Q2?
I my theory on that answer is two different things. 3G mm-hmm. and unlocked iPhones.
So
that's
it.
So they have those two things in their back pocket. As soon as it gets slow and they need to kick up sales, they just, you know, do one or the other and boom.
So you think they're counting on the 3G iPhone as something that will get that number picked up? Or
oh, I think absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you look at how high demand is. Look how much we're talking about it. I mean, it's
exactly
painfully obvious that the minute that they open up 3G, they're going to see, I think they're going to see sales as high as, you know, some of the first launches possibly, and maybe even higher in some markets.
You know, one thing that maybe I'm misinterpreting, but I don't think I am. When Apple said 10 million phones by the end of 2008, what I think they meant was 10 million since the initial launch and not 10 million just for the year.
Oh no, I don't think you're misinterpreting it. I think that was
okay,
I think that's exactly what Steve Jobs said. He said we want by the end of 2008 to have 1% of the cell phone market, which would be 10 million phones. And that was from the launch of the iPhone. So it's really like a year and a half, right?
Okay.
Something like that.
Right.
So yeah, that's what I thought initially too. And I had heard from other places that no, they were actually thinking it would be 2008 alone. But that may be wrong completely.
Well, that's what I was at the keynote, and that's what I remember, the impression I remember, that okay, they've got about a year and a half from launch to do that.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And so, let me see here. Background processes. Okay, we're past that. Also, they've mentioned that the developers are really enjoying the SDK, of course, and that they're also counting the unlocks of the iPhone, the unlocked iPhones, as, you know, part of that number. But do you think that they're getting they're losing a lot of money there by having all these iPhones unlocked?
I don't think so. What they're losing is the revenue that's generated from the sharing with the carriers that they have deals with. But Apple wins when an iPhone is sold because they get paid for the iPhone. And the more iPhones that are out there, regardless of what network they're on, is a good thing for Apple. So yeah, my feeling is Apple probably doesn't care that much that there's all these unlocked iPhones out there.
You think it's just word of mouth advertising type thing that, you know, even though they're not getting the revenue from that, they're getting profits from the iPhones being sold, and they're also seeing, you know, how popular it is.
Right. You have all these iPhones out there, regardless of whether they're locked or unlocked. Mm-hmm. And right. I mean, it's like when the iPod first came into its own and was suddenly really popular. You knew what you were looking at when you saw those little white earbuds, and that was a big thing.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, the other part of this that I think often I even forget about and I don't see mentioned too much is that I would argue that the people who are buying an iPhone and unlocking it, they're in markets that either Apple doesn't have a presence or they're the type of people that would have bought a locked iPhone because they don't like the carrier that Apple's chosen, or they're just flat out the type of person who would never buy a locked phone. You know, the unlocking process isn't too bad. It's pretty easy to do, but it is pretty technical. So, you know, they're definitely not losing money because they're actually selling phones to people who I think wouldn't have bought the phone under the terms that Apple had with those carriers anyway.
Right. Yeah. Whoever buys a phone, in this case, Apple's going to win.
Right.
Yeah. And then the other thing is all the other sources of revenue, as I pointed out, which is why I think Apple really now is seeing that, you know, we're going to these carriers in these certain markets. They're really not willing to do these exclusive deals anymore. We've been hearing that more and more. I've been seeing it in a lot of the reports I've been reading. And so I think they're seeing, hey, we played that game, we played it well, and we've kind of played it out. And I don't think they've been bothered by the unlocking because, again, the more phones that are out there means the more iTunes that they're selling, the more movies that they're selling, the more TV shows that they're selling, the more apps that they're going to be selling in a couple months here.
Right.
So they have so many sources of revenue for this that, yes, those carrier deals are sweet and they make a good profit off of them, but they're not losing that. So they're only gaining by having it in more markets. And, you know, I think... that's why I said the two things that I think are going to get them to that 10 million are selling unlocked iPhones in certain markets and the 3G.
I'm going to add one more thing to that mix for you, which is the App Store, because I think there's a lot of people that once they can start adding programs, I'm doing air quotes, legitimately to their iPhone, that they're going to snatch one up.
Yeah, there's going to be those few killer apps that, you know, somebody's going to see their buddy using on their iPhone after June, and then that's going to be the thing that puts them over the edge. So they've been kind of holding out. I think that's where you're going to really, the App Store is probably the number one thing I think that's going to convert the fence sitters, the guys that are close to the end of their contracts, the guys who are like, oh, I think I want an iPhone. That, and I think Ken made a valid point earlier. I think it was Ken who was saying, you know, the enterprise stuff, the exchange server stuff, that's going to get Apple into I think the business market, all those guys that have been holding off in that arena. And then the App Store is going to get all the other people who are just, you know, for personal use on the fence. They're going to see their buddy's iPhone running that killer app and go, oh, I got to have it now for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of killer applications, there was an app that was, I believe it was just announced today, called iPhone Video Recorder. In the past, the iPhone doesn't come with the ability to record video. You can only take pictures with it. But in the past, there was something from Polar Bear Farm, I believe, that would record a couple seconds of just straight up video. Now with iPhone Video Recorder that was just released, it's not a legitimate application. It may come with the App Store. We're not sure. I don't think they've said anything about it, but it records both audio and video on the iPhone, and you can record 30 seconds of both without paying a donation fee. But if you donate to them, I think it's $20 maybe, they will unlock it, so you can just record unlimited amounts of video and audio, and you can change the settings up a little bit. And I've tried it. I don't think you guys haven't tried it, right?
Right.
Okay.
No, I don't have an unlocked phone for my personal use.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it worked pretty well. It was very satisfying seeing my phone just, you know, I'm recording something and then, okay, well, I'm playing it back. And it was very satisfying seeing it just play back the audio and the video that I just took with my phone. And it seemed like my phone just sort of became so much more valuable to me. Even though, you know, cell phone videos aren't the best, it is handy to have something if you want to capture a moment like that. Not sure. It'll You can email video with it. I am assuming that it takes up quite a bit of space on your iPhone's media partition. I haven't really messed with that a whole lot, but my partition's pretty crammed right now with all the music and whatnot that I have. But you can email the videos to people. I tried doing that. It didn't work out too well for me. But it's promising seeing something like this, and hopefully they'll be bringing it to the iPhone when the App Store comes, or even just simply having Apple do it, because that is a really big convenience. I don't know if you guys have headphones that can record video. I haven't. But I think that would be pretty handy, you know, just as handy as it is to have the ability to just take a picture if you need to take a picture and you don't have your camera with you.
But, you know, considering the number of cell phones that you can take video with already, it just stands to reason that eventually you'd be able to do that with an iPhone as well, either through Apple or a third party. And it's adding in a functionality that a lot of people just assume is going to be there anyhow. So Right. Bring it on.
Yeah, I would love to see a solution from Apple, because I think it would be a little more elegant than a third party, just having it directly integrated right in with some of the applications.
Well, I mean, wasn't that another one of the rumors of the 3G iPhone? And kind of going back to the story I think we kicked off with the design, you know, that would be one thing that would kind of, one of those rumors out there that would kind of counter the picture that Jeff had put up, that, you know, there was a rumor that possibly the video camera, the camera would be, you know, on the front so that you could do video eye chat.
Right, that would be neat.
And also that would refute probably the storage. We were talking about the 8 gigabyte storage on there. Right. I think if you're going to do video, you're going to have a 16 and a 32 gig. You're going to need more storage, definitely not less. So,
yeah,
you know, I think Apple will likely bring video when they can bring up the storage capacity.
Right.
That would make sense.
It would. So finally, the last story of the night we have is Starbucks and AT&T. They finally announced that their service has started rolling out at the Starbucks. If you remember, Starbucks announced that they were dropping T-Mobile and going with AT&T internet services in their cafes. And it was speculated that because Apple already has a presence in the Starbucks stores, that you can go in there with your iPhone or your Mac and get free access to the iTunes store and look at what's playing and, you know, that sort of thing from Starbucks and purchase songs that way. It was assumed that because Apple also has ties with AT&T that there might be some sort of good deal for iPhone and iPod Touch users. But as it turns out, there will, at least according to this press release that AT&T or Starbucks put out today, there won't be any deal for iPhone people, but there will be a deal for people who have AT&T's broadband service at home. So, Jeff, did you go back to that Starbucks that you went to?
No, I haven't had a chance to go back yet, but it's on my list of things to do. And I did find it interesting, though, that the amount of information that the employees had when I was in there, what, like a week ago, and the service was already there, that the amount of information they had about what was going to be available through that service was almost zero. So hopefully they have more info now.
Mm-hmm. And now, go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, the one thing I had heard, though, when this announcement was made initially, and I didn't get a chance to read this specific press release, but I thought there was some sort of deal that anybody with a Starbucks card, meaning the little prepaid Starbucks card, you know, where you can charge it up and use that to make your purchase at Starbucks, anybody with one of those cards would get 2 hours of free Wi-Fi, and I wouldn't have thought it would have mattered what device that you used for that.
That's what I heard when I was in the Starbucks near me last week. So my assumption is the same as yours. It's not going to matter what device you have. You just have to put the little code in so that you can get your 2 free hours.
Right.
Right.
And something that someone brought up in on my site in the comments is that you know, Apple and AT&T kind of keep their press releases separate. So it's also possible that, you know, tomorrow Apple will say, or well, probably next week, we'll say, hey, you know, you get such and such amount of access to, you know, the Starbucks hotspots. But it doesn't seem like now that they've come out and started talking about it and, how, you know, offered up what the deal is, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. But at least for me, that's okay, because I do actually have the AT&T service, but it's kind of a bummer for those with the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, my big problem is that what Starbucks have this? I've been looking for. I don't have the iTunes Starbucks store. I don't have, you know, anything in here in San Diego. So you guys are in which market? I mean, which markets has this been rolled out to?
Well, I'm in Denver, the Denver metro area. So the AT&T Wi-Fi has been available at several, apparently, Starbucks for at least a couple of weeks. Now, the services that go along with that are right now limited just to having Wi-Fi service from AT&T. Things like the iTunes store through Starbucks, that's never made it to this market yet. And from what employees at the different stores around me have said, is that no one was giving them any information about when to expect it either.
Right. I remember it being a really, really slow rollout for the iTunes stuff.
Yeah.
It was like going to be San Francisco and Seattle, and that was about it for a year or so.
Yeah. I'm not really sure why maybe they have to set up little computers in each one of the in the Starbucks stores, or change how they play their music or something like that. But yeah, it's pretty slow. I don't actually go to Starbucks at all where I am. So I'm not sure if there's AT&T there yet. I'm almost certain that there isn't any iTunes store service there yet.
Well, you know what's interesting about that whole Starbucks AT&T thing too is that, you know, it was T-Mobile, and now when I go to my Starbucks, T-Mobile is still in there, but they have some sort of sharing deal with AT&T. There's like, I don't know if it's a transition period that they're going to do this for or whatever, but you can still use your T-Mobile hotspot account, or you can use your AT&T account.
That is good.
Yeah, actually, the Starbucks that I was in last week, both the AT&T and the T-Mobile hotspot network were showing up.
Yeah.
Interesting. So do you think that they have two different hotspots in there, two actual, you know, physical pieces of hardware that they're doing for this? Or do you think it's just like, hey, this is Starbucks's, you know, Wi-Fi that they have there, and it's just being sponsored by that company?
I think they have two.
You think they have two?
Yeah.
It's actually different. Here in San Diego, as near as I can tell, every Starbucks I've been into, it still says the hotspot that shows up still says T-Mobile. And then, you know, when you first connect, it goes to that special, you know, T-Mobile brand, Starbucks branded page that they have set up. And in my case, up in the upper right, it says AT&T customers, click here. But as near as I can tell, there is only one hotspot.
Interesting.
At least in the San Diego markets. San Diego market.
That's interesting. See, I actually went into my phone settings to look at the list of Wi-Fi networks, and I was seeing separate Wi-Fi networks for T-Mobile and AT&T.
Yeah. I actually almost thought that at one of the Starbucks I go to. I went to one Starbucks I go to. I went to has a Verizon wireless store on one side of it and a credit union on the other side of it. And I walked in one day and I saw an AT&T hotspot that I had never seen, along with the T-Mobile hotspot, along with a Verizon hotspot.
Oh, nice.
Whoa, this is interesting.
Yeah.
And so I quickly went online and I did a search and found out that, well, no, the credit union has a deal with AT&T Wi-Fi to offer free Wi-Fi to its customers. So we had AT&T, all three in one location. It was very interesting.
So do we know anything about pricing for the AT&T hotspots, or is it going to be the same as it is for T-Mobile? I'm not a Starbucks person, so
recall from one of the earlier press releases that came out, the AT&T pricing is going to be cheaper than what T-Mobile has been offering.
Yeah.
I think.
I had read, I think T-Mobile, I want to say, charges about $30 a month for access to their Wi-Fi hotspots. And I believe that AT&T is about $20. But I don't know if that's only for people who have the AT&T like home services, like TV and phone, or if that's just the standard blanket price for everybody. But I believe that's the pricing I had heard.
Okay. Well, we're pretty much done with all the news. Let's get to application picks. I think we're going to try and do that, you know, every time we do a podcast, because as the iPhone is such a new platform, there are so many applications out there, and we may not have heard of all of them. So I know that, Jeff, your iPhone isn't hacked right now, and Adam, not sure if you have any applications that are native, but it can be native or web applications, or even applications that work with the iPhone on the computer, obviously excluding iTunes.
How about accessories? Does it need to be software?
You can do an accessory. That would work.
Right.
So what is your accessory?
Well, and I talk about these guys all the time. I'm sure you've covered them on iPhone Alley or maybe not, but just because I had a great experience, I've been a big fan of the Invisible Shield and Shield Zone. I roll my iPhone naked. I don't like having a case on it. I like to have it.
Same here.
Just clean and out there. But I still want some kind of scratch protection, something to protect it from dings and scuffs and stuff like that. I had the Invisible Shields on my iPods and just got them for my iPhones. But what I had never done before was they have what drew me to them over some of the others, and maybe some of the others have the same kind of deal, but they were kind of the first ones I had heard that had this deal, was the lifetime replacement. So it was a bit expensive up front, but they had this lifetime replacement guarantee. So if it scratches or starts to peel, or you have a problem with it, or just generally gets looking dingy, you can exchange it. And all you need to do is, when you buy it, you tell them you bought it. I think I had to fax them just a copy of my receipt, and they put it in their system. And I called them up and said, hey, I've got one that's peeling off. I'd like a replacement. He said, sure, no problem. I paid the shipping charges. They sent it out to me. I think I had it within like a day. A couple days, and then all I had to do was take the old one and mail it back, just so that kept my warranty going, because basically proving that you had it. But it was just a pleasant process. I called them up on the phone to arrange it, that someone answered the phone right away. It was just amazing. So for that, they've totally sealed the deal. I was happy about the product before, but just the phenomenal customer service and the whole experience. And it really has protected my devices. I was really worried the first time I had to take one off of my iPod, that it would be really hard to get off, or there'd be gum stuff that I had to deal with. None of that. It just pulls off cleanly, cleaned it up with just a little, damp cloth and applied the new one. And it was great.
Awesome. How much are those?
The iPhone ones, it's $24.95. So that was kind of the sting up front. It was like $24.95 for
some plastic
film, but it's an amazing material. I don't know if you know the history, but I mean, for Invisible Shield, it was a product that was developed for like Army Apache helicopters going into Iraq, because they found, as they came down on the sand, the rotor blades would basically get sandblasted and torn up. And so, their claim is that this material was developed for military purposes. And I believe it. I mean, it's hard stuff to, hard stuff to scratch.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. I've played with that quite a bit. It's really tough. Jeff, do you have an application pick?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And you've seen the new website that gives you haptic feedback on your iPhone, right?
A website?
I'm totally making this up.
No, I haven't.
He's like, no, but I have to blog about it right now. I'll see you guys later.
No, I'm sorry. I was thinking about stringing you along for a little while, and then I realized, oh no, because you probably would be online writing the article, just like writing down what I'm saying. And
right, yeah,
so
yeah.
I couldn't do that to you. But no, I'm going to go the total opposite direction of just the coolness and functionality of the Invisible Shield, and say that, I'm proud to say that I'm totally hooked on Bejeweled on my iPhone.
Okay. Is that the web version or a native?
The web version, yeah. It's what is it? I set it up as a little web app icon, so I can't even remember the URL anymore. It's I think you just go to PopCap.
PopCap Games.
And that's free?
And Bejeweled is just such a wonderfully addictive game anyhow.
It is, so. It really is. And how well does it play? I haven't played the web interface of that. How is that?
It plays really, really well. The problem, though, is that if you have to hop out of mobile Safari to do something else, when you go back,
your game's gone.
You lose your game.
Ew. That's too bad.
Yeah, so I just don't answer my phone when I'm playing Guitar.
Right, exactly. So my application pick, and it's a native application because that's how I roll, is VNC. And it's based on the Mac application. It's spelled like V, the letters V and then the word C. So it's based off the Mac application Chicken of the VNC, which is, if you don't know what VNC is, it's just basically remote control of another device. So you can remote control your Mac or anything else that can run a VNC server. So I use that a lot on my iPhone because I have a MacBook Pro and then another Tower Mac that, you know, I'm not always near both of them, but I always have my phone on me. And it's a really great application. I think an update just tweaked a little things just came out recently, but that is one of my very, very favorite applications, as nerdy as it sounds. I couldn't live without VNC on my iPhone.
That is so cool. All right, if that's available through the App Store, once that's up and running, I am so adding that to my iPhone.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love it. Well, if it's not on the App Store, I'm going to be hacking my iPhone and putting it on there. So I think that's about all that we have. You can, if you don't want to wait till the weekend to get the podcast, we're going to be doing it. We're releasing the show on Saturday, and we're going to try and get it, you know, every Saturday or maybe push it over to Sunday. But if you don't want to wait until the podcast, we have tons and tons of stories going up every single day on iPhoneAlley.com. And the front page has just three of the top articles. If you want to check out more of the news, you hit the news and you'll get a big long list of all the different news articles, and it's being updated frequently. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions or anything like that about the podcast, you can email us at a brand new account that I just set up. It's podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And that's it. I think unless you guys have anything else to say, I think we're done.
So, nope. I think you did a great job of guiding us through the evening.
Yes, preparation is good. If anybody listened to episode zero, we didn't have a whole lot of preparation, but I think we made it work. But this felt a little more natural to do. So the iFinale episode one is that's it. There we go. Hey Adam.
Yes.
Have you heard this song before?
No.
This is they took it from the 2007 announcement, and they just made a nice little jiggly rap to it. And you know, do you know what YTMND is?
Say that again.
YTMND. You're the man now, dog. You ever heard of that?
No.
it's just basically a website where they put a whole bunch of these animated GIFs of different things, and it's really goofy. And an animated YTMND of this song was done with Steve Jobs just waving his hands and, you know, with this horrible face that he makes when he says "yeah" on stage. But it's really funny. I'll send you a link to it.
His yuck face is like my broccoli face.
Very cool. Have you tried out? I was gonna say the non iPhone hack way of VNCing to your Mac is. Have you tried out telekinesis?
Yes, I have. I tried that.
It's not a great experience. I wouldn't call it equivalent in any way. But you can actually somewhat remote control a Mac using an iPhone using telekinesis and the Safari web browser, which is amazing. Just the fact that you can even do it with a web app is
yeah.
If nothing else, it's a really great proof of concept.
It really is. I don't know how much work has been done on it as of late, but I did play with it when it first came out. It is really cool.
Yeah. It was interesting, to say the least. And actually, there's a lot of remote control apps out there for the Mac now that are all web-based. It seems like every time I turn around, I cover this on the show because I'm a huge... I use VNC all the time as well. It's actually how I bypass and get rid of... needing to deal with the problems of back to my Mac that never works.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah.
When it works, when back to my Mac works, it's awesome and it works really great. But I do actually use the screen sharing app that's built into Leopard now as my client to connect to my VNC Macs at home. I don't know if you knew you could do that, but you can actually, if you just type VNC:// under the, you know, go to server in the finder, it will
Really?
On Leopard will actually launch the built-in screen sharing app.
Yeah, that's cool. Really cool. And I'm assuming you know where to find the little screen sharing app where it's hidden.
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually put it in my doc. It's like in the core services folder, right?
Yeah, I think that's...
Made on a Mac.
You know, it says made on a Mac. The way he says it, it should say made on a Mac, motherfucker.